we're back into Genesis,
and we are now tonight, or for this coming Lord's Day, chapter 24, 10 to 31. So we'll just kind of, again, launch into this passage.
Just anyone happen to look ahead and see what it's about? Okay, well, tonight's your chance, see? Okay, let me just remind you, in verses 1 to 9, Abraham called in his servant. Maybe it's Eliezer, maybe not. And he said, I want you to go. Do not take a wife for my son from the Canaanites. They were a wicked, wicked and cursed people. Go back to our homeland and get a wife there. But don't take my son there, because if he goes, he may be inclined to stay. You know, it's comfortable, and so don't take him there. So there's be careful parameters. And so now we'll see the journey begin. Again, this what's fascinating to me is that this is the longest chapter in Genesis. There's more time spent creating the marriage for Isaac and Rebekah than there is creating the heavens and the earth. It's crazy.
Finding wives difficult.
What's that? Yeah, finding wife a difficult thing. Okay, so I'll go ahead and quote what I read from a commentator. Do you know it only takes... It takes two people to make a marriage, right? A single gal and an anxious mother.
I thought you were going to say that weddings are more complicated than creation.
So, let's look at these first verses, and we'll be looking for the question, who? We'll see what you get here. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. And then he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please let down your pitcher, that I may drink. And she says, drink, and I will also give your camels a drink. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. Okay, so, who do we see here? What whos do you have?
Servant.
Okay, the servant. Good.
Master.
The master. Who? And who's the master? Abraham. Mm-hmm. Okay, who else?
The Lord.
Women.
The daughters of the men. Uh-huh. The daughters of the men of the city.
The young woman.
And there will be that young woman. Okay. So right now we're just kind of looking at some who's. And we'll go to the next one. And it happened before he'd finished speaking that behold, Rebekah was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. Now the young woman, who was very beautiful to behold, a virgin, no man had known her. And she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, please let me drink a little water from your pitcher. And so she said, drink, my lord. And then she quickly let down her pitcher to her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, I will draw water for your camels also until they have finished drinking. So then she quickly emptied her pitcher into the trough, ran back to the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made the journey prosperous or not. So what do we see here? Who?
Rebecca.
In Hebrew, that's Rivka. And in Israel, the nickname would be, is like I had a teaching assistant. It was Rivka. And, but they like to use nicknames there. So her nickname was Ricky. So when we hear Ricky, we think of a fellow named Richard. In Israel, it might be a girl named Rebecca. Anyway. And of course, Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. So Abraham had a brother named Nahor. Again, these are sons of Terah, remember, you might remember. And he had another brother, Haran, wasn't it, who was the father of Lot. He died. Nahor was married to Milcah, and she had a son, Bethuel. Now, why do we name the wife? Again, typically, often they might have had several wives, and so you would specify son of Bob by the wife to kind of trace the lineage. I really do recommend it's much easier just to have one wife, and then you don't have to keep up the complexities there. So now the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin. Let's see, I guess we've read it all. Any other names or people we see here?
The servant again.
Okay, the servant is still in the picture. Okay. And the next passage, he said, "Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth." I think I skipped, by the way, a section, didn't
you
I? Yeah, I skipped.
You're on 22, I think.
Yeah, but I skipped down just to get, I'm looking just on the who's, and the who's stay the same. But we see some addition here in this section. Abraham said, "Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. As for me being on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." And so the young woman ran and told her mother's household these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out to the man by the well. And it came to pass when he saw the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrist, when he heard the words of his sister Rebekah saying, "Thus the man spoke to me," that he went to the man, and there he stood by the camels at the well. And he said, "Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels." Who do you see here?
The Lord.
Pardon me?
The Lord.
I didn't hear that.
The Lord.
The Lord. And Laban, her brother. Just in passing, notice verse 31. When it says the Lord, it's all capital letters. What does that tell us?
Yahweh.
That's his special name. Yahweh or Jehovah. Yahweh, how you want to pronounce the Hebrew. So Laban calls him, "Come up, blessed of Yahweh or Jehovah." Laban is referring to the Lord God, the true Lord God. He doesn't say blessed of Baal or even blessed of the gods. So he specifically names the God of Abraham, the God of the Bible, when he names him. Good. And yes, he does. So you can see the capital L-O-R-D tracing through that section.
How did he know
about Yahweh? This is that's a good question. How does Laban know about the true God? We remember that Abraham came from idolaters. But I think the key is, you know, the faith had been passed down from Noah, and really, you know, Noah's not been gone too long. And so through his sons, and his son Shem in particular, who was, I think, the father of Terah. And so there is still a remnant of the true faith in this area. Now, okay, let's do a little Bible quiz here. We'll see if you really well know your story. Is there any evidence of whether or not Laban was an idolater?
Yes.
For $200.
Mark already said yes.
What's that? Okay, what's the evidence?
He had idols.
Okay, so you've read ahead, and you'll remember, we're jumping ahead now. Isaac and Rebekah will get married. That's a spoiler alert. They have kids, Isaac. They have kids, Jacob and Esau. Jacob's the son of promise. Jacob, there's some conflict we'll get there, has to flee back home here to the home of Laban, and that's where he gets his wives. And when they leave there, his wife, which one?
Rebecca.
I think it's Rachel that takes. And remember, she puts them on in the saddle and sits on it like it was a lazy boy saddle. and she says, "What idols? We didn't take your idols." So what that tells us, though, is idolatry was still well entrenched in the family. They knew about the true God, and so But they were still idol worshippers. Were they true believers? I have my doubts. But Yeah, that's one of the things that really bothered me when we took our last trip to Israel. Just everywhere you go throughout ancient Israel, these Israelite cities, pagan altars, idols, all over the place. You go to the Israel Museum, and here's all these household idols that they discovered in all these areas. So idolatry was just, it was a problem. But he knows who the true God is, and he knows, I think, and so he addresses Abraham and his servant by way of this name. But that's something I've had to be thinking about during this time, because this is a place of idolatry. So the next question I'd like to ask is where, or we'll ask tonight. We'd like to throw our maps in here. I don't know if you can read it up there on the screen very easily. See the big red letters, Mesopotamia. And I'll remind you what that means. In Washington, there's a big river that runs, Washington, D.C., that runs basically through the city. Do you know what the name of the river is?
Potomac.
And it stinks. Well, that's because of all the people that are around it. Yeah. But the word Potomac is a terrible name for a river, because it just basically is the river. Potomac basically means river. Hippopotamus literally means a hippo, a horse of the river. Hippopotamus. So Mesopotamia means the place in between, in the midst of, if you know kind of medical terminology, you'll hear about meso, layers of tissue and all that. Mesopotamia is the area between the rivers, the Tigris here and the Euphrates. But this particularly is called Aram Naharaim, is what the Hebrew is there. Naharaim is of two rivers. It literally could be translated Syria between the rivers. So this is the region that they returned to. Just reminding you, down here, of the Chaldees, that's where Abraham started. And Terah brought his family up north. You can barely see it up here, to Haran. Little letters right above the P. That's where Abraham went with Terah till Terah died and Abraham left. The city of Nahor is probably named after Abraham's brother, Nahor. We know other ancient, we found ancient records referring to that city. I think it's just a little above where Haran is. So it's a modern day Syria. But just so you get a feel for where it is. So again, these rivers here mark out the Fertile Crescent. This red here, by the way, these are some of the highways. And so they would have taken, the servant would have taken one of these routes up here, maybe probably through Damascus, which was one of the great ancient cities of the world, and up to travel. Okay?
Also, those highways represent ancient highways.
Ancient highways, yeah. Some of them better than ours today. I know. They were really terrible trade routes. And so he would have followed one of those trade routes, but there would have actually been pathways kind of cleared out for carts and that sort of thing. Of course, when the Romans come along, the time of Christ, they actually put down stone roads. It's really impressive. But you get the impression there's a lot of travel going on. And not surprisingly, when you're traveling, you need a place to get something, to drink. So the roads tend to stay close to rivers. Plus, that means there's going to be produce, so you can buy supplies and that sort of thing. So that's what we're looking at. If you look at the travel, say, from Jerusalem up to the Sea of Galilee, 65, 75 miles, so it gives you a sense of it. And when you think of going by foot or even by camel, that was several weeks, maybe months of journey. Okay? I wonder how often he heard the expression, "Are we there yet?" Okay, so you kind of get a feel for where things are. Okay, that's one of our problems sometimes, is just thinking, how do these things all relate to each other? How far did they go? What was it like? Isn't it interesting? It's in modern-day Syria, which, of course, my heart grieves. It's a, you know, that place is just so torn up with war, and it's just been a devastated country. So just looking at some where, when, what, why questions here. So we said where, it's in Mesopotamia. What other wheres do you see?
By the well.
By the well. Can you be more specific?
Probably not.
By the well, outside the city. Okay, what's the name of the city? Nahor. I'm guessing it's named after him, or it's the city where he dwelt, but I think it's both, really. Okay? When does this event now take place that's before us?
Evening
time, when they draw water. Why do they draw water in the evening?
Cool.
It's cooler. Maybe they need it for cooling and evening uses and all too, but yeah, if you're going to haul water, you do it when it's cooler. Good. Which, in passing, let me just ask the question, do you remember the story of the woman at the well in Samaria? Mm-hmm. What time of day was that? It was hot day. It was right noon, high noon, which is the hottest time of the day. And that's why Jesus, remember, he's tired. You know, about noon, it's hot. He sat down by the well, and here came the woman of the well. And that's one of the things that tells us this woman was probably a social outcast. Because if you wanted to be around your friends, you went to the well at evening time. And you'd catch up with what's happening during the day and all that. Maybe get the stock reports, whatever. If you want to avoid people and you're going to the well, noon. No one goes to the well at noontime unless you're, you know, maybe just a traveler or something, because it's hot. Okay? What does he do? What events take place while he's there?
Praise.
He prays. Good. Well, I guess we could say he made his camels need a kneel. But the main thing is it's a prayer time. Okay?
He also fulfills what he asked the Lord to do.
How so?
He had said before, "Lord, let this, if I say this and that, and she does this and that." That's what he does.
He gets it started.
Yeah.
Gives her a test case. So he puts a specific prayer before the Lord. He says, let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please set down your pitcher that may drink. And she says, drink, and I will also give her camels to drink. Now, how does that strike you as far as an example of prayer?
Or
specific. It's surely specific. Is it like an arbitrary test, or do you think it's something different? Trick question. A, B, C, D, or all of the above?
It's a pretty big task, right? Just to find somebody that offers to do that.
Okay, so it's kind of specific. It's a unique kind of test.
Also shows something of the quality of the woman he's looking for.
Why does it shows something of the quality of the woman. In what way?
Hospitality.
Okay.
Thinking of others.
Yep. So hospitality, thinking of others. So it's not at all. Matter of fact, I think in that culture in particular, any traveler could have approached any of those young women and said, please give me something to drink. And she would always be required to give him something to drink.
She goes further, though.
Pardon me? But here's the test. Will she really show, not someone who does the minimum, but really has a gracious hospitality spirit? So it's not, but in other words, it's not just an arbitrary test. Please may the woman I'm looking for wear a pink scarf today. But rather, may she stand out in her spontaneous hospitality. Remember, that's been a theme. What was Abraham's response when he saw the three men? He ran. Make more than enough bread. Kill a calf for the three men. Let's do this up. And so she has the same spirit of generous hospitality. That makes sense? Now, how big do you think a pitcher could be that a woman would carry? Maybe this big. You know, maybe it's probably made out of polyvinyl. No, it's probably made out of what? Clay. So that in itself makes it a little bit heavy. Fill it up with water. It's heavy. I'm not sure. What is it? 8 pounds and something for a gallon of water?
13.
So let's say it's a 3-gallon jar. I don't know. Here's a question that you could look up if you're a real careful Bible student. How much water does a camel drink? Or you could come on Wednesday night and find out.
Depends on the size of the home.
Probably depends on the size of the home, yeah. about 25 gallons.
Oh, wow. And
how many camels does she have? 10. 10 camels. So we're looking at 250 gallons of water to the well, trough, to the well, trough. but she says, I will give her camels to drink. And I think it goes on later and says, and they drank to their fill. So.
Drink, were they single or double hung camels?
That's a good question. I think they're probably single, at least in this area, but I'm not a camel expert.
12 and a half.
By the way, notice it says he made the camels kneel. That's typical camel posturing. They kneel when you're getting on and off, and they do that. We actually found someone had set up a GoPro at that well when Abraham's servant showed up. And so we caught a couple pictures of them. So these are not staged playthings. These are, you know, 100-year-old pictures of women carrying a well. How many men there do you see carrying that heavy load of? You kind of wonder what the neck strength was like for these ladies. Did they all have compressed discs or, you know, pretty good necks and balance?
Even today they do stuff like this.
Actually, in looking for pictures, I found ladies that looked like they were in Indian garb. It does. As a matter of fact, looking, I think.
Well, it's got a base, but they still have it on it.
They've got a little hat that sits on, but it does look like it's out of. And I'm not sure why, but they all are a little. Or maybe I've got the camera too. No, it's see, all of these pictures. These are all different. They're at a bit of an angle. I don't know why.
Looks like a Photoshop.
But, you know, have you ever seen these things where, you know, or heard these stories where we're going to teach a woman how to walk properly, put a cup of tea on her head, and, you know, imagine, I mean, these ladies must have really actually had kind of a graceful walk if they learn how to walk, because you see the walking, you know, I've seen pictures today.
Neck and above shouldn't move, that's the whole
key. That's the key.
Yeah.
Holding your neck and your head doesn't move.
Yeah.
So, again, that's a certain grace. But anyway, so this is kind of a pictures of some of the scenes of the time. And here's some more camels. I don't count if I have, I don't think I have 10 there. And then, you know, why did he need 10 camels, by the way?
Well, he brought a lot of gifts, maybe. Did he bring gifts?
Gifts, okay, first of all, just supplies for the long travel. But also, laden with gifts. Now, why did he have to bring so many gifts?
Bride price.
And see, here's one of the questions. My master, frankly, is very wealthy, and he'll take care of your daughter. How do I know? Nice shoes, what? 10 camels loaded with stuff. Okay, and you could look at the stuff. This man is a man of wealth. First of all, camels were, at this point, not as common. This is what he sent a fleet of 10 Cadillac Escalades. In other words, this was an impressive. Have you ever seen like the motorcades when the president's traveling? all these shiny black SUVs in a row moving quickly. It doesn't have quite the same appearance to us. But in other words, this is a, not a show, but a display, an evidence. We'll take care of your daughter. My master can send a fleet of a mini caravan of camels loaded with gifts. So that's kind of a sign. And her, and the response again, though, is for her to water these camels. That's probably a good little picture I have here. Notice she's loading up the trough, 10 camels. I think I read somewhere it takes about 30 minutes. You know, they can go for days without drinking. So when they arrive, they're going to guzzle it down and reload the hump. And so she would have been working. And the key is, that was her spontaneous, he was looking for, that would be her spontaneous response. So if I saw a young woman like that, some of the things that would jump out at me, gracious, hospitality, not afraid of work, you know, and just so there's a, which are all, that wouldn't be, those wouldn't be bad on a list for a prospective mate. Gracious, hospitable, not afraid of work. So it wasn't just this crazy little, you know, I'm going to put down the fleece and see if it gets wet. Then I'll put down the fleece and see if it stays dry. It was more of a, show me the one that has the character. But notice he initiated the conversation. Is that cheating? Well, there again. Even though, you know, he was there by the well, I think it probably would have been inappropriate for one of those young ladies to walk up to a strange man and speak to him. Not inappropriate for him to go to a young lady and say, may I have a drink of water? That's what you did. So everything here is completely above board and upright and a display of character. So there again, you picture... Oh, and there's another picture. So, you know, it's all through the centuries, different ones have drawn, shown pictures. It's kind of funny. Some of the artists that I found, ancient and older artists, they make the whole scene look very European. You know, with her garb and all this, it's like, that. This isn't Syria. That's Amsterdam or something. That's okay, so. Some when and what questions as we look at this section. Happened before, we noticed it. When tell me some when things you notice.
Before he finished speaking.
Yeah, before he finished speaking. How's that for a great answer to prayer? And wouldn't that be an encouragement? And it's just the right girl. I mean, we're told, and it'll come out in the story, Rebecca. And then it traces the lineage right back to Abraham's brother. So go back to my family. Guess what? Here comes Rebecca. He went to the right city, named after his brother. But the first one out is, or the first one he sees is Rebecca, before he even finished praying. So we just see God's grace in the whole matter. And that brought me to mind the word providence. I think that's something that's important in this whole discussion. The Westminster Confession of Faith, you know, we talk about the catechism. Those are questions and answers to help us understand the Westminster Confession of Faith. These guys back in the 1640s had a remarkable way of explaining things. And so here they explain what providence is. God, the great creator of all things, does uphold, direct, dispose, and govern all creatures, actions, and things, from the greatest even to the least, by his most wise and holy providence. According to his infallible foreknowledge and his free and immutable counsel of his own will, to the praise of the glory of his wisdom, power, justice, goodness, and mercy. Here's the whole point. That basically says God controls everything. And here's the important thing, because if God does not control everything, then he doesn't control anything. All it takes is one little cell in my body to go through one DNA change that makes it now a cancer cell, and my life can be over. God doesn't control, can't control how long I live if he can't control that cell's DNA. Or I often think of the Challenger spacecraft, remember? One O-ring. I've never heard of spacecraft having O-rings, but we learned about it from them. One O-ring didn't handle temperature changes properly, and several lives entered eternity. So if God can't control the little things, he doesn't can't control anything. So, but providence is God superintending all things. And so providence is God working through normal means to accomplish his purposes. By contrast, a miracle is God working through super normal means. So providence is, providential mercy might be you're getting your wife to the hospital, and by God's mercy, every light's green. A miracle would be, there's no potholes. No, a miracle would be the road's flooded and all of a sudden the water's parked and you go right through it. You know, that's contrary to the laws of nature. You see the difference? So providence is the fact that God orchestrates, and the wonderful thing is we don't even recognize most of what he does in providence. How he, you don't even realize that if you'd been 3 seconds later getting through that intersection, you might have been hit by that dump truck. God's providence. He orchestrates through normal means. Miracle, abnormal means. And so as an illustration of that, remember when Jesus was out teaching the disciples? And he said, they said, look, we're out here. There's not a 7-Eleven in sight. How are we going to feed all these people? He says, go buy them something. They said, what? Or he said, you provide. And they said, you know, we don't have enough money. All we have is 2 fish and 5 loaves. And how did he end up feeding them? He just multiplied them. That's a miracle, right? When he basically was creating new bread and new fish. By the way, that's an illustration of creation. Bread really comes from wheat, doesn't it? And so to create new bread, what he's basically doing is creating something with the appearance of age. Because a seed would have had to be implanted, grow into a wheat stalk, be harvested, ground, raised by the yeast, baked, all those things, he creates it, the process already done, right? Created with the appearance of age. When God created the earth, he plants the stars in the heavens, gazillions of light years away. They didn't float out there for gazillions of years. He put them out that far away. And even, and I, as I would understand it, he put the light created already in the process of getting to the earth because he created with the appearance of age. It has nothing to do with Genesis 24, but I thought I'd say it while we're here. Okay. Makes sense? So here we see on a small level creation with the appearance of age, big level creation of heavens and earth. But this is a miracle. Providence would be if he said to his disciples, how are you going to feed them? And all of a sudden they noticed, there's a fish and chip stand right here. You know, that's providence, okay? And so they just go over and say, we'll take 4,000 pieces of chicken and 400 pounds of chips. See the difference? One is a miracle, and the other would have just been the fish and chip guy saying, you know, I don't know what it is, but I just have a feeling that there's going to be a crowd out. I'm going to take my cart over to that little hill over there today and just see if I can drum up some business. Providence. Okay? And so, it took me a while to find a picture of a fish and chip. That would work. Just let me mention one another thing. So I kind of passed over the verses because I was kind of just looking on the who's. But it says, I think it's in verse 24. Someone read verse 24 of chapter 24.
So she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, Milcah's son, whom she bore to Nahor.
Keep reading. I'm looking where he mentions the ring and the where he puts gives her the ring and the bracelet.
Well, that was ahead of it.
22.
Oh, 22 and then 30 becomes again? Okay. 22 to start with then. And then we'll come back to, okay, give us 22 and then 30.
Is it 22?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't you read that one for me?
When the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels.
Okay, well, we'll just start with that. So notice the camels finished drinking. 10 camels, 25 gallons each. So he's kind of, and plus, you know, she didn't quit. You know, he's probably watching. She didn't mumble. She joyfully, maybe she made small talk.
Well, he even says she quickly ran, you know. Wasn't
she,
like,
yeah, quick run. Can't you just see that? So much the spirit of an Abraham. Yeah, she's got it. And he gives her this ring. and a bracelet. Let me mention, okay, so it says the ring is a Becca, it's 1/5 of an ounce of gold. I think I saw gold was just around between almost $1,300 an ounce today. A fifth of an ounce, that's still pretty good. 10 shekels is 4 ounces of solid gold. So that's about a 5,000 dollar bracelet he just hands her.
Each or?
Well, the 10, just for the bracelet.
Two bracelets.
Of yeah. 10 shekels, but it says of 10 shekels. So probably 10 shekels between the two of them. That's not your standard hi, glad to meet you kind of gift. It's a very generous gift because he recognizes this is God's woman for my servant, my master. This is the, you know, before he finished praying, there she was. Perfectly fulfills everything. And again, he must have just with heart leaping with joy, and he says that the Lord did it, as he's just watching the whole process and thinking, Lord, I've come this whole journey. I stopped here. I prayed. You brought her right to me. And there she is. She's living out the character. This is the woman for my master's son. So he puts on that $5,000 bracelet. And by the way, that's a really high standard for a first date. And later on, we're going to read that when Laban comes on the scene. Is that in verse 30, Chaejun?
Yes.
Why don't you read that?
Start at 29.
Okay, yes, Laban. Good.
Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. And then verse 30, as soon as he saw the ring and bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebecca, his sister, and it goes on from there.
So, notice, he saw the bracelet. He saw the ring. And he saw, this guy's serious. You know, so one commentator at least said, though he gives glory, you know, praise to the Lord and all this, he suspects that there might have been even already a spirit of greed. What kind of guy can put a $5,000 bracelet on my beloved sister? Yeah, don't let this one get away. And so he goes running out to meet him. But you see, again, the 10 camels and all this makes it very clear. My master can take care of your sister, your daughter. That's what that's about. And that makes the effect. But so that's.
Did he propose to her?
He's just putting the ring on, putting it on her. But he'll make the proposal on behalf of his. Yeah, it looks like a proposal, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, he's on his knees.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, I'm like, where's my bangle?
Yeah.
I only got
a
ring.
Yeah, really. Well, guys, it's just in time for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
There's your standard.
Yeah, if you missed your opportunity,
yeah.
Go on.
So is it okay for women to wear gold and nose rings?
Absolutely. Well, see, that's interesting that it says nose ring, because it mentions one ring. We do know from archaeology that they did have nose rings. So, but it just says ring. The word nose is not related to this particular word. Did it go in her, was it a nose ring or what? I don't know.
But there is one reference further down, Pastor, about the nose ring. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her arms.
I think the word there is face. Oh. But again, normally, if you're going to put a ring on someone's ear, wouldn't you normally think there'd be one for each? You know, so it can't be dogmatic, but it seems like it was a nose ring. And so some translations just go ahead and put it in a nose ring, right? Because he put it on her face. He put the single ring on her face, and so that's a suggestion there.
Yeah, 22 says a golden earring.
Pardon me?
22 says a golden earring.
A golden earring.
TJV.
Okay, so in the King James way, they call it an earring. Yeah, it's just a ring. And so we have to kind of speculate where it was put.
New King James says a nose ring.
Okay.
47.
So interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, 47 is an earring upon her face.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably do some more study of some archaeology and see what the options were back then. But the key thing, I think, is, again, a lavish, he's a serious suitor, again, who shows I'm able. Because that whole bride price, a big thing what that was saying is, I can take care of your daughter. And and the other side of it was actually in the law, it says you're also compensating for the loss of the daughter. Now who's going to carry the water? So it was both, but he's saying we can take care of it. So we'll pick up next time with the negotiations with the family, but this is a time where we can just really see how the stage is being set.
Like when you assume that the servant wasn't alone.
Oh.
He probably had dozens of people with him.
I think later in the next passage, it will talk about the servants or the others that were with him. Yeah, because for one thing, you can't manage 10 camels by yourself for that long a journey. You would not travel. Think of this kind of treasures that he's carrying. This is just the first thing. You would not travel alone like that because there were bandits. And so he probably, remember, Abraham had trained servants who could fight. And this is the most important mission he will ever send out. So I'm sure there was an impressive retinue of warriors, of servants.
And you look over there and say, you got all those people and you want me to water your camel?
Yeah.
I'm going to water your camels.
Good point, yeah.
I mean, that's a servant's heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, but see, partly, this is modeling for us. This is a woman of character who puts herself out. You could compare, it sounds to me like we're seeing some hints of the Proverbs 31 woman. A woman of valor was a hardworking woman.
Genealogically speaking, Rebecca then would have been actually Nahor's granddaughter. And probably would have liked Isaac to her as being second cousin, something like that.
I can never figure out second, third, fourth cousins. I have a hard time figuring out first cousins. But I think you're in the right direction. Yes, this is Nahor's granddaughter marrying Isaac, or maybe Abraham's son. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm not sure at the age difference. You notice Nahor doesn't come on the scene. He's probably already passed on. I'm not sure. I can't remember if we're going to find out how old Rebecca is. We know that Isaac's 40 at this point.
Well, I see here where the servant says, "Be on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." And right away she takes off to her mother's household. Her parents say, "Oh, relatives."
Yeah.
This is a
huge event. Well, remember, and this is the other thing. At the end of chapter 22, there was a little paragraph that said, it gave us some background. So in other words, there was word coming, probably by way of the two possibilities were by caravan travelers or by Facebook. But one way or another, they knew about the family relatives.
You mean they didn't have rotary phones back then either?
Probably not.
So they wouldn't have known about Abraham. They wouldn't have, no one would have traveled back and forth between the two places. And they wouldn't know about him since he was such a great and wealthy and...
It's possible.
The Bible's not too explicit about mail service.
Yeah, I don't know. But in fact, when he chased those kings up north,
I can't remember now. I want to say they got somewhere up around Armagh.
And that would have been like a big deal that people would have heard.
I think so, clearly. Again, those kings would have traveled, you know, this route. And so... that event might have been known.
Like you said, the stuff at the end of chapter 22 kind of indicates that news did get around.
Yeah, so they may have been aware that Abraham's doing okay. And notice when his servant comes, they name the name of Yahweh, maybe being aware that's where Abraham is. But we just don't know how much they knew. But I think there would have been. Again, the traders coming and going, I think Abraham was recognized. Remember down here that when he bought the grave, oh, you're a prince among us, a prince of God among us. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very reasonable that they might have known.
You think of Laban, he's somewhat unscripulous. We'll
yes.
Find out later, but he runs out there and sees all this and thinks, this is what they sent with the servant. What does this guy have at home?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the whole point. You know, that's why some were saying he recognizes, wow, as the Hebrew says, ka-ching. Don't let this one, honey, get away. Good. Okay, well, we'll stop there.